text 087 69
44 500. Near FM.
Now on the line I have Louise Bayliss from Spark Campaign Ireland, and we're going to be talking about a new report into the poverty of lone parents and the work of Spark itself. Good morning, Louise. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks very much for having me on.
No problem whatsoever. Absolutely delighted. Louise, maybe we could start. Maybe you could tell us a bit about Spark and its work.
Spark, it was set up in December 2011, and it was set up in direct response to Budget 2012, which proposed bringing in wide range reforms against the one-parent family allowance payment. At the time, we could foresee that this was going to really impede working lone parents, and we campaigned from that day onwards to try to improve the situation. We feel vindicated with the report that came out from St. Vincent de Paul this week, but we're not happy to be right. It's one case we would have loved to have been wrong.
And maybe you'd tell us a little about that report.
Well, the report showed, it was done by St. Vincent de Paul, Dr. Tricia Kelly, and what it showed was that poverty rates among working lone parents have doubled in the last 5 years, from 2012 to 2017. So what in effect it means is, back in 2012, one in 11 working lone parents who were working were living in poverty, and their families. That has now increased to one in five. So one in five people who are out working and raising a child on their own are living in poverty. And this, we believe, is a direct result of the changes that were brought in Budget 2012 and implemented in July 2015.
And how do we compare internationally with other, you know, our European partners?
Well, according to the report and according to all the... that we have the highest rates of poverty, especially for working lone parents. You know, usually we're told that poverty, work is a way out of poverty, but in Ireland now it's no longer a route out of poverty for lone parents. We also have the situation where we have the highest childcare, the second highest childcare in the OECD. Only America is the highest, so we're the second of the OECD, the highest in Europe, and we also are in the midst of a housing crisis, and we have some of the highest housing crisis. All of that combined, and we are the only country in the OECD area that doesn't have a statutory maintenance agency and really have no effective child maintenance system. Those three factors combining together, now with the withdrawal of support for working lone parents, has basically plunged lone parents who are working into poverty. Those who aren't working, their routes out of poverty have now been closed. And it's that sense of desperation of, how do I get out of this poverty trap when work won't help me, the courts won't help me with maintenance, and I'm stuck in a housing crisis. And it's that desperation and feelings that doors have been locked out is really affecting and impacting on all lone parents, whether they're working or not. Because before, even if you weren't working, you could say to yourself, when the child gets to five or six, maybe I can go out, maybe I can get a better life. But now that feeling is, well, even when I do start working, I'm still going to be just as impoverished.
Well, you know, as a parent myself, and I've been blessed that myself and herself have, you know, been there together all along, and I know how difficult it is as a two-parent family to bring up children. I can't even imagine how difficult it is as just a lone parent on your own with the. And it's a heavy burden. Bringing up children is a heavy burden. The responsibility.
You know yourself. It's a full-time job in itself, and it's a two-person job. You know, because sometimes you need to pay good cop, bad cop, and if you are the only cop, it's very hard to get that balance right. It's very hard to be the main earner and the main carer. Often you hear in two-parent families the wife saying, "Well, sure, all my wages goes on childcare anyway. I may as well not work." Well, if you are the only one paying for the childcare, how do you pay the rest of your bills?
Indeed. Even so, and you know, I in my working life, I spent most of my, I totally admit it. My wife is the one who basically brought up the children. I was out on the road most of the time, not at home.
And that worked, you know.
For us, it
worked,
yeah.
Because you were able to afford to do that and she was able to mind the children. But imagine trying to do both jobs, and that's where the problem is. And there are the supports aren't there. The fact that we have no child maintenance system is absolutely appalling. The only way maintenance, the state enforces maintenance, is until a child turns 7. And if the parent, the other parent is in receipt of one parent family allowance. Once that child turns 7, the actual Department of Social Protection send out a letter to the father saying they're no longer obliged to pay maintenance unless it's court ordered. Can you imagine the logic of that?
It doesn't make sense. It's something that I've said, and this cuts across a whole range of things throughout society. We're not very good at what I'm going to call primary care, whether that be in health or in this case with children, bringing them up, and whether it be two parent family. Our government doesn't see the benefit in making sure all children get the appropriate childcare and education, and that they're fed well enough, and to me it doesn't make sense, because at the end of the day, if a child hasn't been fed well enough or had the proper education or all these things, it impacts when they're adults, and it costs the state more at that stage.
Exactly. I mean, early intervention, prevention and early intervention, providing children with a secure background now, ensuring that all child have the security they need, it makes much more sense. It's much, much cheaper. You know, for every euro you put into child in early intervention stage, you save €4 later on. And that's proven scientifically, you know, from different reports internationally. For every euro you spend on a child at this stage, it saves 4 times the amount when they get older. You know, whether that means from healthcare to even prison to other, you know, to addiction, to whatever it is. The making sure a child has a safe, secure childhood reaps benefits for the whole of society, both financially and socially.
Yes.
And the fact that we have increasing child poverty is a shame in an economy that's improving. And everybody has been slating reports saying, well, you know, everybody suffers austerity. But this isn't during the times of austerity. This was 2012. 2012 was when 1 in 11 were in poverty, the height of the recession. 2017, when we were out of the recession, is when it's now doubled. So this isn't to do with austerity. This was a poor policy choice.
Yet it would seem to me that a lot of our politicians take the view of not in my term, and that they don't look forward. All they try and save money today, but forget about that by saving money today, you're costing money tomorrow.
That's it. Because it's a short term, it's a 4-year cycle, it's about getting votes in the next 4-year term. It's not about the long term planning. And we see the disastrous impact we have of that on the healthcare, on the health system, where there's no long term strategic planning. The same with the housing. It's about keeping housing costs low at the time, but now we see the lack of building over the last 15 years, 10 years, what it has done, and it's now causing short term cost. But it's people who are at that moment thinking of the next vote rather than agreeing to a long-term strategy.
Yes,
and it's the same with this whole child protection. You made a very valid point about how care is not recognised. It's not counted in the GDP of the country, and as a result, it's ignored basically. Do you know? And so the work of caring, and caring is work. Do you know what I mean? But it's just not paid, and it's just not recognised, and it's just assumed that it will be done in relation, and you still will do everything else as well, and it can't be done.
Yeah, the politicians, government, the state apparatus seem to just work on what we used to call the key point indicators, that they have them set, and care for children is not one of them, and because it's not one of them, it's not looked at.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And it's all about massaging the unemployment figures as well, you know, so trying to get people back into work, even if with the cost of childcare, that financially they're not better off, and emotionally for the children, they're not better off. So it's about a numbers game, and children are suffering because of that numbers game, and women are, and because it is chiefly women, are suffering too because of that numbers game.
And I personally think one of the biggest what would you call it, the faults of our government, scandals you might call it, is how over the last 10 to 12 years, maybe even 15 years you might say, is the lack of social housing that has been built. Totally took their hands and washed their hands of it, both on a national and a local basis, and just let it go.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's a false economy, because you know you have the case where we're now paying. The actual madness of it is, we sold a lot of properties through NAMA to vulture funds. We sold them for a song, like 40,000-50,000 a unit. These vulture funds bought these properties, or not even vulture funds, they were, you know, capital asset companies. They bought them for a song, like, you know, very short price unit. And now those same companies are renting them back through the private HAP scheme at 1,800, 2,000 a month. And our government are paying that. You know, these companies are making huge profits, and they're not even paying tax on these profits in a lot of cases. And had we even held on to those units instead of selling them off for dirt cheap prices to these big property asset firms, if international property companies were coming in and buying up the properties here, that was an obvious sign that they could predict that there was going to be a housing shortage. And we allowed this to continue. Again, it's short-term planning that we all pay the prices for.
You're totally right, but the only thing I would say is I don't have a problem with the, we'll call them the vulture funds or the big asset managers coming in and buying things up. You know, that's business. They did. The thing is, we are the people who were representing us sold them.
That's it's absolutely them.
That's who I have the problem with, not with the large international companies. They're just doing what they do.
They saw the profit, but I mean, if they could see the profit, our government should have seen it too.
Totally, and it was totally obvious that it was there, exactly. And it was just a lack of foresight. And I know there's a great thing out there. Oh, we had to repair the budget, and we had to do this, and we had to do that. Yeah, but that didn't mean that you threw the baby out with the bathwater, as they say,
exactly.
And that's what they did.
And it was short-term planning, and we were all paying the price for it now, and more importantly, our children are paying the price. Child poverty is increasing. When there was supposed to be a campaign to end child poverty by 2020, we now are in a situation that there are more children living in poverty.
And, you know, I can't understand, and once again, I can't understand how a lone parent, you know, a single income family, can afford to put a roof over their heads at the prices that are out there now.
To be honest, it's more basic than that. The government commissioned a report called the Indicon Report in October 2017. And some of the stats from that are, and this is from the government's own research on it, that 60% of lone parents couldn't afford to have two pairs of shoes, proper strong shoes. I'm not talking about cheap, you know, but two pairs of proper winter shoes, 60% of lone parents couldn't afford that. 50% of lone parents couldn't afford a warm, waterproof coat for winter.
You know, that's... It's absolutely frightening and upsetting.
76% couldn't afford to go out even for a coffee in the last 2 weeks to meet a friend. That's stark reality of what living in poverty is. And it's when you live like that, when you don't even have the break that you can't even go out for a cup of coffee with a friend, it's very hard to plan your future, to see brightness. And you said something about how it costs other type of money. It does, because I can guarantee you a lot of those women are going to the GP and are on antidepressants or on medication, which, you know, is small bit of money alone.
Well, there was just a report out...
standard of living.
Yeah, there was just a report out yesterday about... it was an RTE Investigates report about the level of antidepressants being given out and how it had nearly doubled. Oh, funny enough, over that same space of time, I think it was either 2011 to 2012 up to 2017. So,
yeah, there's, I'm sure there's a strong correlation.
Yeah, exactly. But tell me this, what can we do about it? And how can our listeners support you?
Well, the first thing that we have been and are continuing to do is campaign to have those changes that were introduced in July 2015 to reverse. It's the same philosophy that adopters do no harm. We know that lone parents were in poverty beforehand, but this has made it worse. So reverse and then start doing the proper research to give support. One of the biggest things we would call for is a statutory maintenance agency. And we would ask that the second parent is legally obliged to take care of their child. You know, so much so that we have gone to the United Nations in Geneva. We went in 2017 and we stood in front of the UN Commission and we told them the situation about how there's no maintenance system in Ireland. And they have issued, the CEDAR issued a report asking the government to review its policy around child maintenance. That we feel would be a huge thing. It shouldn't be on the shoulders of one parent. All the stigma for raising children on your own goes onto the shoulders of the parent who's actually the responsible one left at home. And as such, the whole government policy around that has followed on through that, where there is no child maintenance. One of the things that I find very annoying, Michael, is if I didn't pay my property tax tomorrow, if I cancel the direct debit, I can guarantee you that revenue would be onto my employers and would be deducting it at source. However, if a father does not pay his child maintenance, revenue don't get on and deduct from source. They say they can't. Now, there's something wrong where we in this country put the property tax above the welfare of children. Another statistic that I find is really horrific is there was something like 400 or 500 women jailed last year, women who were in poverty who couldn't afford a TV license. Yet in that, and they were owed thousands, a lot of them, in back child maintenance. One man was jailed for not paying his child maintenance.
Would you think? And because I have a thing about child maintenance that it causes conflict. And what I would be more an advocate of is that rather than one parent having to pay maintenance to another parent, is that the state steps in and the state gives a maintenance grant to the parent who is looking after the child. It's automatic.
I agree with you to an extent, and that's what happens in Scandinavia.
And then the other parent, is charged that through revenue.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly the way it does. Firstly, I believe child maintenance should never be in the courts. Courts, by their very nature, are contentious, and there's always a winner and loser, and it's stressful, and it shouldn't be on the whim of a judge. It should be based on actual fact. In Scandinavian countries, what they do is they assess the income, they decide the level of support, the state automatically pays the custodial parent that money, and then they collect it directly from revenue.
You know, that to me, that makes far more sense, and it takes...
It really does, and it takes the feeling of
the acrimony. Yeah, it takes the acrimony out of the relationship.
Yeah. It absolutely does, and it's one of the things that we would absolutely advocate is to take it out of the court system. The courts are clogged up. The courts are private and closed, and also it really does depend on the whim of a judge, and that was actually said by one of the UN commissioners at the CEDAW Council when we went there. She actually said in horror, "Are you telling me that your maintenance is awarded on the whim of a judge on the day?" And the Irish government had to answer, "Well, yes, basically." And she said, is there a way of enforcing it? Well, if the woman comes back to us and tells them. But realistically, it doesn't happen. It's very hard to get an enforcement order. And even if it does, a judge will say to you there and then, well, what do you want me to do? I can't just grab it from him. No, you can't, but you could go through revenue and get it. And it's not done.
Now, we're quickly running out of time. So I'm going to ask you, if one of our listeners wants to get in touch with you or wants to learn a bit more or wants to support you, how can they do that?
The best thing would be if they're on Facebook, they can join our group on Facebook. But if they would like to get more information, we have done so much policy work and we have a lot of written information or even advocacy work if they want support, would be to email us on sparkirelandcampaign@gmail.com.
Louise, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and I wish you all the best.
Thanks very much, Michael. I appreciate the opportunity.
No problem. Take care, Louise. All the best. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.